We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, it was a very exciting offense to watch, especially with Hasselbeck finally putting things together in the NFL for the first time.
It's January 2004, Seahawks at Packers. This is Remember That Game, the podcast about sporting events that take you on a journey and maybe chart the path of the zeitgeist. I'm your host, Thomas Emmerich, and my guest, returning to the program, is the deputy editor of SB Nation's Field Goals, John Gilbert. It's been a five-year rebuild under Mike Holmgren, and you, John, have been through it all, along with Sean Springs, Walter Jones, Max Strong, and Chad Brown, though the IDP king, Chad Brown, is out today. How are you feeling this wildcard Sunday as the Seattle Seahawks are actually playing ball?
I'm happy they're in the postseason. It's been a long time. You know, I went through the entirety of the 90s. We made the playoffs in Holmgren's first year after a whole lot of, you know, ugly seasons in the late 80s, early 90s. And then, you know, under Dennis Erickson, under Tom Flores, you know, so just to be in the playoffs, I was extremely happy. I was very nervous for a number of reasons. And I know we'll touch on at least a couple of those, but it was, you know, just, it was only the second time in my life and the first time in my adult life that I got to, second time, excuse me, in my adult life that I got to see the Seahawks in the playoffs. And I was hoping for a win. We didn't quite get what I was hoping for, but I was definitely excited that we were on the right track.
Yeah, that first playoff appearance back in 99, Rick Meyer and company falling to Dan Marino and the Dolphins. Now, fast forward, you know, we're in the fifth year of the Holmgren era, second playoff berth. What was the vibe of this rebuild going into the 03 season for you, and how did this campaign impact that?
The 03 season was kind of the season where it was like, okay, things are really coming together, because they had the 99 season. They made the playoffs there in Holmgren's first year, but it was definitely a weird feeling. It felt like we kind of backed into the playoffs because they started off real strong. I think off the top of my head, I want to say it was 7-2 and then finished the season at 9-7 or 10-6, whatever it was, made the wild card, but it was not one of those confidence inspiring things, and then you miss the playoffs the next 3 years. It was like, okay, well, you know, we could miss the playoffs under Dennis Erickson, we could miss the playoffs under Tom Flores. Like, are we doing the right thing here with Holmgren? So once they took away the personnel issues from him, once they, you know, said, you know, just focus on coaching, you know, and you could really tell a difference where he was, that the team seemed a lot more focused, a lot more in tune, and things went, I mean, I definitely liked what I was seeing during the 2003 season a lot more than I had seen in the seasons before. Not that I was anywhere near understood nearly as much about the game, you know, then as I do now, but it's 2003 was a season where it was finally, okay, you know, maybe this Hasselbeck kid can do it. Maybe, you know, these youngsters that they've brought in to, you know, can actually put things together and we can go somewhere. This is starting to look good.
Yeah, and did it feel like Holmgren, as you mentioned, buying the groceries and all that, doesn't have to worry about those things? Do you feel like he's really cooking this season? They were first on a third down conversion percentage, first in opening drive touchdowns. Now he's going into Lambeau, where he used to coach. You know, what kind of emotions are going on there? What kind of confidence did you have in that offense with Holmgren?
It was certainly a change, because after so many years of struggling, whether it was Kitna, whether it was Dilfer, whether it was Hasselbeck, you know, the offense was clicking, like you said, and especially it got to the point where it was, you know, 3rd and 1, 3rd and 2, 2nd and 1, 2nd and 2. It was an automatic conversion. It felt like it was, you turn around, you hand the ball off to Sean Alexander, and you let him run behind Hutch and Jones on the left side of the line. And, you know, you've got two Hall of Fame offensive linemen there. You know, you just run with it. You don't fight it. Play your strength. And they really were doing that, combining that with Hasselbeck really starting to develop, add that to a couple of offensive weapons, you know, finally coming together and showing what they could do. It really did feel like, oh, these are the pieces of the puzzle really coming together. And this, you know, this team could make some noise in the postseason. Let's see what we can do.
Hasselbeck, he and Dilfer had been platooning for years, which at times included the crowd chanting Dilfer while Hasselbeck was on the field. Now Hasselbeck has the full-time job under Holmgren and Dilfer's mentorship. But to start the game, they really played up this he's Brett Favre's former backup angle. And he's because Holmgren drafted Hasselbeck in 98 with the Packers on the recommendation of Andy Reid. The announcing crew of Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, and Chris Collinsworth, they really set the table with all the interconnectivity between these teams. But Joe Buck, I felt like, he set the stage in an entertaining way for a broadcast, but I felt like he made Hasselbeck seem a little brother here. When Seahawks come out for their opening offensive drive after forcing the punt, they're there in Lambeau. Well, they used to call Mr. August around here because of how good he was during the preseason. Matt Hasselbeck, who is quoted as saying, being linked with Brett Favre, is one of the coolest things I have going for me. He is not ashamed at all with his love of Brett Favre. And so this coming into Matt Hasselbeck's first throw as a quarterback in the playoffs, a sixth round draft pick. He starts off with two completions, two first downs to Kerryn Robinson. What were your nerves like for your quarterback?
I mean, I was obviously nervous because it's the postseason, you know, it's one and done. So you're certainly worried. But he, you know, like you talked about earlier, first drive came out. They moved the ball. You know, they didn't put it into the end zone, but they did, they did get a field goal, I believe, on the opening possession. And it was, you know, Hasselbeck had maybe it's just me remembering this, you know, but it felt like he would come out so overamped and so hyped up initially, early in game sometimes, that he would, you know, overthrow receivers, or, you know, the ball would be high, the ball would be low. So to see him come out and, you know, get a couple first downs, move the ball early, it definitely put things at ease. It was like, all right, let's do this. Let's get this, you know, let's beat these guys. I hated Green Bay. Always had a longstanding, you know, distaste for Green Bay. Was not happy when we traded for one of their quarterbacks, obviously, but it's, you know, obviously he turned out to be, you know, up until that time, one of the best Seahawks quarterbacks in history, has probably, you know, been displaced in that title if you want to consider that. But it's the way the game started, things felt good, and then they started to go sideways.
How did that chip on the shoulder form? Was some of that Holmgren? He can't do it with Seattle as an organization when he could do it with Green Bay as an organization. Where did that Green Bay beef start?
It was just one of those things where I grew up in the Midwest in Kansas City and outside Kansas City. And so when when they were showing the early game kickoffs, it tended to either be the, you know, if the Chiefs were on in the early slot, I got to see, I was watching the Chiefs. And if the Packers were on in the early slot, then I was watching a lot of Packers games. And it was, you know, just because they had won, you know, they'd been to the Super Bowl a couple times, Favre had taken them to the Super Bowl. It was, I just rooted against them. That was, you know, didn't want to root for him. And I wasn't real happy when the Seahawks hired Holmgren, but I was happy that they hired someone who was at least successful. And yeah.
The guy who revived the Packers then comes to revive the Seahawks. And then 5 years into his tenure, they have competitive team in a wild card game against his former team. A lot of interconnectivity there. Packers or Seahawks have defense coordinator Ray Rhodes, who was the Packers. Holmgren trades for Matt Hasselbeck. The Packers fulcrum of their offense that year was Amon Green, who they got from the Seahawks. Now, the first two drives, seems like Holmgren has a beat on this Packers defense, but they missed some opportunities. Hasselbeck hits Maurice Morris in the back of the end zone for a receiver would have been a routine touchdown. Maurice Morris kind of bobbles and steps out of bounds. Second drive, after the first drive, Holmgren helped Matt Hasselbeck ease into the game with a throw. He gets Kren Robinson on a drag against a linebacker. Easy throw for Hasselbeck on the first play. Gets him warmed up. The second drive, Hasselbeck hits Kren Robinson for what should have been a touchdown. Robinson drops it. They end up kicking a field goal. It's a 6-3 Seahawks game. They'd eventually go into the half down 13-6. How are you feeling going into the half with the way the offense is moving well, but missing opportunities and being a team that kind of drops more balls than you'd probably like?
No, they were certainly, I can't remember if it was the case or not, but I believe they led the league in drop passes that season. And that was an issue all year. And it certainly felt, okay, you know, we'd taken a good punch in the first half. Well, you know, but we're still in it. We're only down a score. The Seahawks at that time, they had a horrific record in early starts. They always started slow. So I was, you know, had hoped to be ahead or tied heading into half, but to only be down a score is like, okay, you know, we've withheld the first half. Now it's kind of, this is the second half is going to be our time. Let's see what we can do. Come out, take the lead. And, you know, I was, even though they were down by a touchdown, I was pretty confident because the little things that they would do wrong in the first half of games that had an early start, it felt like they would do right. They would do better in the second half. And so I, you know, being down only a score, obviously they weren't getting the ball to start the second half. So that was they did. They did get the ball to start the second half. I apologize. And so that felt, you know, it was like, all right, we can, you know, we're in this, you know, this.
Yeah. And then the third quarter, huge swing of events here due to the receiving and run after the catch ability of one Steve Hutchinson. Hasselbeck doesn't see the linebacker there, throws it right in the linebacker's chest, bounces off. Steve Hutchinson catches it and advances it to the one-inch line. Fourth down, they go for it. Hutchinson pulls, clears what could have been a walk-in. You know, he's untouched. Sean Alexander, touchdown, tie game. What was it like being almost this automatic on the goal line for the Seahawks rush offense with Sean Alexander, Steve Hutchinson, you got Walter Jones there, and at center, Tobeck, guard, Floyd Womack, and right tackle, Chris Terry. What was that like? And is that the best Seahawks offensive line can remember watching as a Seahawks fan?
That specific season may not be the best offensive line. It may not be the exact iteration that was the best. Maybe it was 03, maybe it was 04, maybe it was 05. But those two, you know, Jones and Hutchinson on the left side. And then, I mean, it'd be a competent offensive line with me at center, you at right guard, and somebody else at right tackle. I mean, you know, it's fourth and one. You can run behind those two. And, you know, it's like, it's not really, we used to joke. I remember joking at the time that it's not first and 10, it's first and 9, because if we can get 9, it doesn't matter. As long as we get 9 before third down and it's fourth and one, it's automatic over the left side. We used to joke that the Seahawks play on a 99-yard field because if we can get to the one, it's going to be Alexander over Jones and Hutch for the one. And it was that good, you know, that strong. And that really helped the offense in terms of what they were able to do, where that commanded extra guys in the box, which opened up, especially when you get Kren Robinson in there. You've got Darryl Jackson still making plays at receiver. That really opened things up for, you know, a lot of fans, myself included, we'd been excited for the potential for Etu Lamili for years since he was drafted in the late 90s. And finally put together a couple of very good seasons. That was one of the peak seasons of his career there in 2003. And you saw the potential that, you know, a lot of that was simply just the number of offensive weapons they had. It's not the, you know, they weren't the weapons that they had. You know, it wasn't a Galloway or it wasn't, you know, a Tyler Lockett who were, you know, Pro Bowl potential or a DK Metcalf or someone like that. But it was guys who they had enough competent weapons and a quarterback who could get them the ball to complement the run game that they did have and the ability of Hutchin Jones to just dominate that left side to the point where defenses had to focus on that so that it opened up other areas of the field.
They got down to the goal line. Hutchin Jones made it so Alexander, had the space he needed to get in there. Three touchdowns that day. If DFS was around back then, Amon Green and Sean Alexander probably get you there. As mentioned, Atul Amili actually had 62 yards and six catches that day. For he probably is priced around $3,000 that day, I'd imagine, or in the 3,000s. No other tight end did too much. That weekend slate, you got the late Sunday game, Broncos, Colts, Peyton Manning going out for like five touchdowns. And then Saturday, you had an ugly one. Titans, Ravens, Anthony Wright for the Ravens there. But they hung in that one. They had a pick six off a Ed Reed tip. So if you played Ravens defense, you got there. And then in the Saturday late game, Dallas getting crushed by Carolina, and you would have needed to have Steve Smith in your lineup there to get across. But this Seattle offense, no one went over 100 yards. They seem to spread out the production a lot. Was it a greater than some of its parts offense? And do you remember, outside of Sean Alexander had a pretty good year, do you remember grabbing any of them in fantasy back then?
Oh, I would stack my team with, you know, my depth in fantasy was always, Seahawks. It's okay. If I need a wide receiver for a week or I need an emergency receiver, Bobby Engram was always my guy, until he blossomed to the point where people were snagging him before I could snag him late in the draft. But it's, you know, it really was one of those offenses where the sum was greater than the individual parts because they had, and it wasn't, like I said, we all know the numbers Alexander put up, but a lot of that obviously had to do with Jones and Hutchinson. Not to take anything away from Alexander. Alexander was very good in and of his own right. But they had enough guys on that team, you know, Engram, Daryl Jackson, Corinne Robinson, you know, guys who could get open or guys who could do what they did specifically well enough that they could impact the game. And it was, you know, whether it was Bobby Engram on third down or Corinne Robinson, on a slant or whatever it was, they had the guys that they could go to situationally that they could make it happen. And that allowed them, that gave the offense that greater than some of the parts ability over the course of the season, where it was, you know, it was a very exciting offense to watch, especially with Hasselbeck finally putting things together in the NFL for the first time. And, for a Seahawks fan who had lived through the Rick Meyer and the Dan McGuire and the everybody else, Stan Gelbaugh and Kelly Stauffer in the 90s, it was fantastic to be able to sit down and say, okay, this Hasselbeck kid, you know, we've got a few more years of enjoying this, and this is going to be fun.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, what was the Corinne Robinson experience like? First two catches on the first, or two catches in the first two plays of the game, two first downs. Has a big catch and run on a broken play where he sees, you know, explosiveness. Hasselbeck slips on kind of a shoddy turf in Green Bay that day at Lambeau. Single degree wind chill, but yeah, he slips, falls, gets up, and hits Corinne Robinson, kind of sitting there waiting for it. Great kind of play call from Holmgren, where semi like a bootleg off a handoff, and then finds Robinson there. Robinson gets to use his speed, get to the edge, pick up a big chunk. Leading Seahawks receiver that day, had over 1,200 yards the season before, dropped off a little bit in 2003 down to around below 900 yards. Top 10 pick for the Seahawks in 2001, but famously picked ahead of, you know, folks like Reggie Wayne, Steve Smith, both played that weekend, put up some big numbers, as well as Chad Johnson, who would soon be playing in the playoffs in the coming years. What was that Corinne Robinson experience like? Top receiver that day, but also had a couple key drops.
That's kind of it. I mean, I think you kind of hit the Corinne Robinson experience right on the head with that last part. It was, you know, leading receiver that day, but a couple key drops. And that's what, when I think back to Robinson, it's like I look back at his stats and it's like, wow, you know, I do remember that he had 1,200 yards in 2002. But the thing that sticks out in my mind, what I remember more than anything, is just, you know, time and again, it feels like the ball, whether it's, you know, him on a curl, him on a slant, you know, whatever it is, the ball hitting him right in the hands and just, you know, dropping to the turf or bouncing off for an interception. And that's, you know, that was the Corinne Robinson experience. That was, you know, it was boom or bust, really, in terms of, you know, he was going to get open. The question was, could he catch the ball? And that was, it felt like that was the, you know, the entirety of his career. That was, you know, the issue until he ran into off-field issues. And then catching the ball became a secondary issue behind everything else. So.
Super Bowl, a squad you had in 05. They didn't have Corinne Robinson by then, but I think they had Joe Jurevicius in place there. And then, you know, they also, the offensive line, as you mentioned, upgraded a bit. I think they had Locklear right tackle in by then. And how does Daryl Jackson, you know, being part of that team that did make it to the Super Bowl and was as a top receiver, how does he stack up against other receivers on Seahawks teams that, you know, made a run in the next decade?
You know, he was one of my favorite players. D-Jack was awesome. I absolutely, you know, absolutely loved it. Was gutted when he left for, when they let him leave for San Francisco. And then obviously he was out of the league in just a couple of years, but he put up 2,000 or 3,000 yard seasons for the Seahawks, you know, at times where they were not necessarily always the best team. And he was actually injured for, he was out, I want to say, for half of, if not more of, the 2005 season, where when they made the Super Bowl run, they went on the 10-game win streak in the middle of the season. And I want to say he was out for either most of or all of that entire winning streak. And, you know, it kind of showed that it was like, okay, you know, we've got so many, you know, so many guys who are weapons who are not necessarily the high-end weapons. They're not the guys who are going to make the All-Pro team. They're not the guys who are going to go to the Pro Bowl, but they're guys who can get the job done at a level well enough that they're going to, the team could win even without him. And I, you know, I think that was a huge part in letting him go, because it was just, you know, they did absolutely didn't need him to win. He was a great piece to have in the system. And I think they obviously would have been better in 2007, 2008 if they had kept him, but, you know, they went elsewhere and it didn't work out. So.
Yeah, they really spread out the production that year. Hasselbeck threw for nearly 4,000 yards in 03. Jackson, the leading receiver, with under 1,200. No one else really sniffing 1,000. They spread between Corinne Robinson, Bobby Engram, Max Strong, the fullback, and Sean Alexander, not known as much a receiving back, they combined for about 500 receiving yards. As far as cornerbacks, you know, this is well before the Legion of Boom, but they did promising rookie Ken Hamlin that season. They had Sean Springs, a veteran from the previous Seahawks run, the pre-Holmgren Seahawks, and also had a young Marcus Trufant. They're not the 2013 Seahawks defensive backs, but How do you think they stack up?
It was certainly one of the better secondaries in my life. To that point, the defense has struggled, obviously, significantly at times. They were greatly improved, certainly liked the up-and-coming youth of Trufant and Hamlin. Springs always felt like I was always kind of I look back and it's like, yeah, he was a very good player, but I was always kind of disappointed just because as a third overall pick, I expected him to be first team all pro every year, you know, because the expectations as a fan that are, you know, it's just what you expect. And it's like, come on, buddy, like, what are you doing? Like, you were picked third overall and, you know, you're good, but you're not super phenomenal, all pro first team, unquestionable, you know, lockdown corner, Revis Island, Richard Sherman style corner. And, you know, they took you over Walter Jones and Jones is over here, you know, kicking your ass in terms of production. You know, what are you doing? Like, you know, they traded up for both of you. Let's go. But I mean, you know, you look back on it now and it's like, okay, he was fantastic for a third round pick. Or, I mean, for the third overall pick, he was still very good. He just, you know, it was the expectations of myself as a fan at that time, you know, were that, okay, you know, you're the third overall pick. You're going to the Pro Bowl every single year. And that, you know, obviously is not the case. It was just my expectations were out of line. But Springs was a phenomenal player. Trufant, obviously, played for a long time. Hamlin, unfortunately, you know, the whole situation there in 2005 with the you know, off-field incident that led to, you know, eventually the end of his career. But it was, you know, the defense was certainly exciting for the first time in a long time for a Seahawks team that had basically won the ball by moving it, you know, at least during my lifetime.
Yeah, a ton of changes since the 98 pre-Holmgren squad, going from Warren Moon and John Kitna to Matt Hasselbeck and Trent Dilfer, and changes all over the place. You know, Ricky Waters to Sean Alexander, and then the defense, very young by 03, built from the ground up by Holmgren, safe for Sean Springs there. He ends up making some plays, including they really wanted to go to Amon Green on the wheel. This Packers offense really built around Amon Green, had over 2,200 yards and 20 touchdowns that season. But there was a key play where Sean Springs stayed home and used his speed to catch up, contest that pass. Packers eventually rally back from 20-13, hold the ball for nearly the entire fourth quarter, tie it up, and then take the lead 27-20. Hasselbeck has 2 minutes and change. How are you feeling in that moment as the game seems to be drifting away from this young team?
No, absolutely. I mean, it felt like he was in control. I mean, the third quarter went basically, it was kind of a tale of two quarters in the second half. You know, the third quarter was all Seahawks. The fourth quarter was all Packers. And so you get the ball back with a couple minutes to go, you know, down seven is like, all right, you know, at least let's go. You know, Hasselbeck has shown that he can deliver in this situation. We've got the weapons to move the ball. You know, let's do this. And they got it done. They moved it down the field. I remember being extremely disappointed that they didn't go for two in the win on the road. You know, but obviously, I mean, you know, coaches are going to do what they're going to do. And so, you know, they go to overtime and get the ball first, don't score, punt it away, hold them, get the ball back, and it was start moving the ball. It's like, all right, I like where this is going. I think we got this. We got this.
So, yeah, so you wanted a 2-point conversion, give it to Marshawn, or give it to Sean behind Walter Jones and Steve Hutchinson. Take your chances there.
Yeah, I mean, even that, or, I mean, everybody's going to be looking for that. So, you know, run some play action off of that. You know, give it to, you know, one of your offensive weapons, toss it to Bobby Engram somewhere in the end zone. He's got, you know, hands of glue. But it was, you know, that I definitely wanted, I did not want to go into overtime in Green Bay on the road in the postseason after having squandered a fourth quarter lead and needing a 2-point conversion and, you know, needing a comeback. Obviously, there was still significant time. There was a minute left or whatever it was. And so you're like, okay, you know, the Packers are going to get the ball back. All they need is a field goal. You know, to win. So, but I still would have preferred to go for two. So,
Yeah, Packers playoff games down to the wire. The Terrell Owens catch a few years earlier. Even Gilbert Brown was activated today, who's around for a lot of their runs in the 90s on the Packers
Kansas
side.
Kansas alum.
Yep, there you go. And Brett Favre, even though he's kind of sort of coaching up him and Mike Sherman, this new class of Packers receivers, Donald Driver, Javon Walker, Bubba Franks at tight end. I mean, they're 7.5-point favorites and have more playoff experience overall than the Seahawks. Packers get the ball back game tied. They don't quite get close enough or deep enough into field goal range for a single degree, wind chill kind of day, shoddy turf, field goal short from Longwell, from 47 yards. And so, okay, now we're on the road. Young team in OT in the playoffs. Matt Hasselbeck there for the coin toss. He knows all the guys on both teams are standing up there, keeping things loose. After the game, he said, I knew all those guys, so you know, I was just kind of having fun. But he says, yeah, we'll take the ball and we're going to score on the hot mic there. We'll get to the result later in overtime. And do you think a storm that ensued as in the era of Twitter and you know and social media, do you think the reception to that would have been any different?
Oh, I mean, he would be memed into, you know, eternity if that had happened today. You know, it would be, you know, we want the ball and we're going to score would be, you know, one of those reactions on Twitter or, you know, wherever that you're going to post a picture of Matt Hasselbeck that's saying that says, you know, that's just, you don't have to post a response to a lot of things. You know, it would just be that. Like he, you know, the media certainly covered it. They made us, like you said, a media storm out of it. It was all over. It was all over SportsCenter, you know, every sports show you could find, every local news show. But that was just, I mean, it was a fraction of what it would be today in the online world between Facebook and Twitter and everything else. It was, I mean, you know, Hasselbeck got roasted and rightfully so, but it would have been 1,000 times worse if he did it today. It's something that, you know, it happened and yeah, we talk about it now and it's been 20 years and we're still talking about it, but it's something that if it had happened then, it would have been the amount of people talking about it, the amount of attention paid to it would have been significantly greater than what was even, you know, what was at the time. Because back then, I mean, it was, unless you were watching SportsCenter, unless you were tuning into the sports section on the news, they weren't talking about that. Whereas today, social media, you get that feed, you know, Twitter, it would be something where my sister would be asking about it. And then she'd be, you know, who hasn't watched a football game in her life where I wasn't sitting on the couch next to her, you know, would be sitting there saying, you know, she'd be memeing Hasselbeck because she would know what it means because everybody would be roasting him. So
the way I saw it is like the reward is I keep things loose with my team. The risk is I further motivate the other team. That was like my kind of thought about it. But what was your thought in the moment?
My thought was like, oh man, I really, really hope we score on this because if we don't, that's, you know, certainly the last thing you want to have said or have done. And then, you know, for the possession, the overtime possession to start the way it did, where it was just three and out, it was just like, oh man, this is not. We got the ball and we did not score. We did the exact, you know, almost the exact opposite of it, three and out and we're done. So, ugh. But it's, you know, it is what it is at this point. Looking back, we can laugh on it, but it was certainly not, I wasn't super excited about it when he said it. So
that ends up being a punctuation on the game when kind of putting the team on his back there, the running game didn't get going. And when you factor in all the drops, they had a really good playoff debut on the road from Hasselbeck. And the most shown clip from this game is the one Seahawks at driving to midfield, not too far from field goal range, potentially one throw away from field goal range, but they got 3rd and 10 after another drop. And so Collinsworth looking like pressure, Hasselbeck's going to audible Joe Buck as the ball snapped. They're coming. Picked off. That's Packers 33-27. Moving on, what was your immediate reaction and did your feelings evolve in any way as you had time to process?
Oh, it was just, I mean, it was one of those plays where you saw him drop back, you saw Hasselbeck drop back, you saw him deliver the pass, and then you saw, it was just one of those where you looked at it and you said, oh, that's got a chance to be picked, and then, you know, you saw the cornerback jump the route, and you saw Al Harris just going down the sideline, and I just, you know, you went from 3rd and 11, like, all right, you know, like you said, we're 20, 25 yards away from a long field goal range. We probably need 30 because of the weather and the conditions and everything. But it's still only a couple first downs. All right, let's just do this to, you know, we've got a chance. We're in this. We're going to sneak one out on the road. All we need is a field goal, sudden death, and we win. And then just the absolute opposite, wind out of the sails, wham, game over, you know, throw stuff at the TV, collapse on the couch, like, just, oh my goodness, what just happened? Like, this was not what was supposed to happen. That was not what was, you know, what are you doing? But it was just an absolute gut punch of an ending, where it was, you had the hope, you know, it was kind of almost a lightweight preview of 11 years later, if you will.
Yeah, at least you build up a little resistance to the pain.
Yeah.
The Packers go into number one seed Philly the next week. Nearly knock off Andy Reid, the one who put Hasselbeck on Holmgren's radar. 4th and 26, Eagles complete a pass. That Packers team, you know, had some opportunities, missed some opportunities to probably beat that team on the road. And then the Eagles play the Panthers in the NFC Championship game. I don't know. Did you feel like you had a shot that season to go deep when you're watching the following weeks?
It certainly felt like it. It was one of those where it was, okay, you know, it was the first team where it was like, all right, our offense can stick with basically anybody. You know, they're not the highest scoring team in the league, but when they get hot, they can compete, and they can. It felt like they could score at will. You know, when everything came together, when everybody was focused, when they weren't dealing with drops, and when the running game was working. But the defense still had struggles. You know, and it was still a team where in the right situation, they could compete with anybody. And I think it was that season actually, they were 10-0, a perfect 10-0 during the season when they played either late in the afternoon or in prime time, and they were 0-7 in every single game that started at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And it was just, you know, whether it was the way they were approaching travel or whether it was just the way they were approaching the game, I don't know. But it was just, that was one of those things where it was, you know, there's a reason that gamblers bet against teams that, you know, West Coast teams that played in 10 a.m. starts back then. And I don't know what's changed between now and then, whether it's nutrition, whether it's travel, whatever. But that team was the epitome of, you know, fantastic at home in their own situation. You're playing at 1 o'clock Pacific, unbeatable. Playing at 1 o'clock Eastern, can't do a thing. You know, something always comes up just a little bit short. And it was one of those teams where it was like one of those things where it was certainly like, you know, if we could have just played this game late, you know, snuck out a win, played another game, played late in the divisional round. Yeah, you know, it certainly felt like a team that they could compete with anyone. They may not necessarily beat anyone, obviously, but it felt like the first Seahawks team that had the pieces that, you know, when everything clicked, they could stick with anybody in the league.
This has been another episode of Remember That Game. Please rate, review, subscribe, and check out more episodes.